Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning and welcome to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. George. Today I have a special guest. His name is Ms. Hobson Williams, and she has a law firm in New York. And we've talked on the show a lot in the past about how Medicare and the Affordable Care Act is affecting, or I should say transferring the wealth from people who are working class to the government. And if you're not careful, you can end up not being able to pass along your family wealth, your home, to your banking account, to your family if you get sick. And I wanted to have an expert on today to speak to this because it's not my forte, but it's something that I think potentially can affect everybody in this country. So I want to thank you so much for coming on, because I think if people don't know things, they can't take corrective measures. And it's all about knowledge, because that's what power means. So if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you actually got into this, because it's a little unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I kind of fell into it after I graduated from law school. I ended up working for the New York City Human Resources Administration, which in New York is the agency that actually administers the Medicaid program. I worked in the Medicaid litigation unit, and I had the daunting task at the time of suing senior citizens who were recipients of Medicaid benefits.
Wow.
Yes. So after that experience, gaining the knowledge that I did, I worked at several other elder law firms, and eventually I opened up my own law firm.
Now, you know, people make it sound like it's one of the things that you worry about when people are on Medicaid, that there's a lot of fraud. Did you find that was a lot of a problem, or it was rare? What was the thing that people tripped up on most?
Well, it wasn't so much fraud as much as it was people really not knowing what the rules were and not necessarily having an attorney guide them through the process. And that's where it becomes unfortunate, because as you stated, knowledge is power. If they had only known what the rules were in advance, they wouldn't have found themselves in the situation that they did.
Well, I can definitely speak to it from a physician point of view. The rules change almost monthly for us. So there's no way really that you can stay ahead of this and not run afoul from our standpoint. Is it just as bad from the Medicaid recipient standpoint?
Absolutely, absolutely. The Medicaid rules are so complex that it would be, you know, virtually impossible for the average person to understand the complexities. And as you stated, they change regularly, and you need to have someone who's familiar with those rules. I mean, you have attorneys who practice in real estate and commercial litigation, personal injury, all types of law. But you really want someone who specializes in that area, because if you make a mistake, if you or your attorney makes a mistake, it could cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars. Not thousands of dollars, but hundreds of thousands of dollars in recovery, Medicaid recovery, back to the government.
So walk us through somebody who gets admitted to a hospital. Because one of the things that we know is, as medical professionals, the bills are exorbitant. What happens if you do get admitted, you get Medicaid benefits? Well, how can somebody run afoul and not know it if they don't disclose their financial information? What happens in that regard?
Okay, so typically what happens is you may have an individual, a senior, who may have a fall. They may break a hip or some other injury, which causes them to go to the hospital. They're treated, and then it's determined at some point that they need to go into rehabilitative care, into a facility. At that point, the person is undergoing rehab. It may become a point where they need to stay in the facility longer for an extended stay. So if they have not done the proper planning, they're exposing their assets and their savings to a Medicaid claim. So it's just as simple as a person having a fall, going into the hospital, needing rehab, and that rehab becoming a long-term stay. If you have not properly planned, all your savings, investments, anything you have become an available resource from which you either have to pay privately for your stay, or you have to apply for Medicaid. But if you haven't done the proper planning, you're not going to be eligible for Medicaid.
Wow. And it's not something anybody thinks about when they're sick. They just want to get better.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's really very important because most middle-class people, they usually may not have a home, which is, you know, in today's market can be extremely valuable. And they may have modest to, you know, higher amounts in the bank. They could have $50,000 in the bank. They could have $100,000 in the bank. But all of that exceeds the current Medicaid limits in most states. My practice is in New York. In New York, the Medicaid limit to become eligible is $14,850. So if the money you have in the bank is in excess of that, you're not going to be eligible.
That's incredible. I know that's really low. That's amazingly low.
Exactly.
So I've heard of people having to literally sell their house. I have a friend who has a friend who's really ill with a catastrophic illness, and she had property. She had to sell everything, basically go destitute in order to get Medicaid. And that wasn't something that was weird then. I thought that was really odd, but apparently that's what she lived in New York, and that's what she had to do.
Wow, that's unfortunate, and it's actually a misconception that you need to liquidate all your assets and spend them down to that $14,850 before you become eligible. If you do the proper planning prior to that, you can save virtually all of your assets. And even if you have not done the proper planning in advance, if you seek proper counsel, you can save at least half of the money that you have without, you know, having to transfer or spend down all of your resources.
What about if you're Medicare? Is that the same rules that apply there, or is it just Medicaid?
Well, Medicare and Medicaid are different. Medicaid is what they call a means-tested program, meaning it's based on your income and your resources. Medicare, typically, you become eligible for when you turn 65. I mean, clearly there are some exceptions, but generally speaking, at the age of 65, you become eligible for Medicare. And Medicare does not completely cover a stay in a long-term care facility. It's very limited. So, for example, if you needed to go into a nursing home, Medicare will pay 100% of your stay for days 1 through 20. For days 21 through 100, they will pay a copayment to the nursing home. After day 100, you're a private pay person, and you're going to have to pay the private pay rate of the nursing home.
Wow.
So it's at that point that you would try to become eligible for Medicaid.
You know, this is so, you know, you have to be an insider almost, or be part of this, have to be in the system to know these things. How do people educate themselves? What do people need to do to plan? Because they need to know this.
Right. Well, I strongly advise people to go seek out an elder care attorney. There are also some great articles online that you can go to prior to familiarize yourself with the program. There is AARP. Their website is absolutely wonderful, and they provide a plethora of information on this topic. They also have a database of elder law attorneys in every state. And AARP also provides a discount to participating, enrollees for legal fees. So if you select an AARP attorney, they'll give you a discount if you're an AARP member.
That's amazing. You know, let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to explore a little bit more about what you're talking about. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having a really important conversation with Ms. Hobson-Williams about your future. We're all going to be senior citizens at some point, and I think the economy down the road, who can predict what that's going to be? But you really have to do everything in your power to pre-plan. And when you do that, you know, the mantra of the show, if you know what's coming, you don't have to live in fear. And it makes life a lot more, palatable to live, to put it mildly. I mean, this is talking about the future of your family, the future of what you want to leave to your loved ones. And to me, as a senior, that must be one of the most important things to give you peace of mind. So how young should you be to start planning your future so that you don't even have to worry about this when you become a senior?
Well, I know that some people may think that when you're 20, you don't have anything to fear. You know, you have your whole life in front of you. Mm-hmm. But I would say it's never too early to start. At least by the age of 30, 40 years old, I think everyone should start to think about long-term care. At those ages, you can actually purchase long-term care insurance, and the premiums will be affordable at that age, at those ages. However, once you hit 50 and 60, the premiums really become unaffordable.
Wow.
So those are some of the things that at a younger age we can start to think about, mm-hmm. is obtaining long-term care insurance. We also want to think about our family and who the objects of our affection are, mm-hmm. and who we would want to leave our assets to. And in the event that we become incapacitated, who would we want to help us manage our affairs and our finances? Because that's really a big part of it also. Because if you have assets, significant assets in the bank, a home, and you become incapacitated in some form, either physically or mentally, and you do need to engage in some planning, but are physically or mentally unable to do so, who is going to step in and do that planning for you and make the necessary transfers so that you can become eligible for Medicaid and receive the care you need without depleting your assets? So these are all conversations and things that we need to discuss.
And I know that there's the tax situation, and, you know, when you're trying to leave my property or monies to people, you know, death benefit, or when you die, and then the tax associated with that is something that people should probably consider as well, right? Should you give it to people and make your changes and make your move before you pass away, basically, because you won't be taxed? Is that true or not?
Well, there are certain things that you can do during life to plan to remove certain assets from your estate to, mm-hmm. avoid estate taxes, mm-hmm. such as placing assets in a trust. When you create a trust, you remove assets from your estate and thereby avoid estate taxes in most cases. However, every situation is different, and you should always consult either a trust and estate attorney or an elder law attorney before undertaking any of these actions. But definitely a trust is a wonderful vehicle to remove assets from the estate, to avoid estate taxes, and in some cases can also be an excellent planning tool for Medicaid purposes and shielding assets.
That's exactly the question I was going to ask you. So there's a lot of, you know, you can use the law in your favor, basically, and you can protect or shield yourself, because these taxes are getting a little crazy. I mean, I'm hearing it's, you know, 60-70% estate taxes. You can't even leave something, if you're not sick, to your family once you pass away.
Right, right. So, yes, those are absolutely things that we need to consider. And we also need to be mindful of the fact that taxes are different in every state.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have federal estate taxes.
Will your trust shield
you
from both?
You need to be mindful of that as well.
Does the trust shield you from both federal and state?
It can. It
okay.
can if it's done properly. Trusts are very intricate planning devices, and you really, really have to be careful with the practitioner that you select who's going to create and draft that trust for you, because you want to make sure that there are no pitfalls.
Now, I learned a lot by going to your website, and I recommend that people do that as well, because you have blogs, you have information which gives people, let them do their own research and go into detail. And it's really, you have to put skin in everything that you do. You have to be a partner in it and not just let
Absolutely.
Someone lead you. I think that's really key. One of the things that I wanted to definitely touch base with you about is the different types. You mentioned at the beginning of our conversation about the different types of lawyers. You know, you see these things, obviously the people on TV and all that stuff, that's a whole other ballgame. But what
right.
would you be looking for? I mean, you specialize in almost solely in helping seniors really navigate the system. What's the style of law or the specialty that you practice so that people can know that?
Right. So I think that what separates what I do and practitioners like me is we do focus on seniors and issues that affect seniors. It's specifically, in New York anyway, called elder law. So you want an elder law attorney, which is different from a trust and estates attorney in a lot of respects. Because with a trust and estates attorney, usually what they're doing is they're drafting a will for you, they're doing trust for you, they do advanced directives. Once the individual passes away, if there are challenges to a will, they may do that type of litigation. What we do is we do a lot of counseling directly to the senior and their families, because usually it's the family members who come to us. It's the family members who see something, some sort of change with their loved one. The loved one may be forgetting to pay bills. They may be wandering out of the house and getting lost. They may be leaving the stove on. So it's usually a close family member who starts to notice these changes, and that's when they usually come to us and ask us, what should I be doing? Because remember also, Medicaid pays for long-term care in a nursing home,
mm-hmm.
but Medicaid also pays for home care services so that you can actually have someone come to your home and help provide services to you, whether it's light-duty cleaning, cooking, helping the person dress, bathe themselves, toilet, ambulating, taking the individual to the doctor. So Medicaid can also pay to have a person come in and perform those services for you as well. It can be 4 hours a day. It can be as much as 24 hours a day, a live-in. Or it can be two 12-hour individuals who will come in. And if you have Medicaid paying for that, that's a big savings to the family.
You know, that's not only a savings, but from a psychological and emotional standpoint, you have some backup. Because usually the caregivers are on their own. Sometimes they have to quit their jobs. It's just emotionally, they're the last resort and they do everything. Just knowing that you can actually plan, even if you're not independently wealthy, you can actually get, I didn't even know that Medicaid offered these benefits, which are amazing and cost effective for the system as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we also, again, I have to stress that every state is different.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for a fact that New York has one of the most expansive Medicaid programs in the country. So that while we may have these benefits, individuals in other states may not, their Medicaid program may not provide such expansive services. But you're absolutely right. It provides a great resource to family members, and it relieves some of the stress because it's very, very stressful for family to actually have to watch a loved one deteriorate and to actually be the person who's there providing those services.
Absolutely. And then to know that your resources are dwindling or you don't have the means to do everything you need to do and want to do for your loved one, that in itself.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that's an area as well where you do need to do appropriate planning, because the Medicaid income and resource limits are very low for that program as well, for home care. In New York, you can't have more than $825 per month in income if you're seeking eligibility for home care.
That's ridiculously low. I mean, you wouldn't even have a home
very
in New York for $800 a month. How do you, you can even afford an apartment there? I don't think over these numbers. It's amazing.
So in New York, and I'm sure for individuals across the country, many people have income based on Social Security alone that exceeds the $825 a month limit. And so what we do in New York, we can create a pooled income trust. And what that does is it allows the surplus, the amount that's over the $825, to be placed in this pooled income trust, which is usually administered by a not-for-profit organization. And what that organization then does is uses that surplus income to pay the individual's bills.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
So it's another planning technique that actually allows you to have income over the $825, and that overage can actually be used for your care, whether it's paying your rent, your mortgage, your electricity bill. Any household bills can be paid with that surplus income. But you won't know about that unless you seek out a professional.
Well, I'm not understanding quite. I'm not sure I get this. What kind of monies can you pull in there? Do you put your Social Security? Does that go to that trust so it's not coming to you directly? Is that how that works?
Well, what you would do is you would add up all of your income that you receive every month.
Mm-hmm.
If it's Social Security income, if it's income from investments, if it's pension income, and you would add up how much you receive every month. And if, for example, after you add everything up, your income totals $1,000 per month, you're clearly over the $825 monthly income limit, and you're over it by $175. So I'm oversimplifying this, but essentially what then happens is every month you take that $175 and you deposit it with the pooled income trust company.
Okay.
The pooled income trust company then takes your $175. There are some administrative fees that they may deduct, but essentially they'll take that $175 and they'll use that to pay any bills that you may have.
Okay.
That up to $175. So if you have a, let's say, an electric bill, that's $150. Then the pooled income trust will take $150 of what they're holding and pay your electric bill. And they'll hold $25 left over.
Mm-hmm.
With that $25, if you have, let's say, maybe an insurance premium that costs $25, then the pooled income trust company will take the $25 and they will pay your insurance premium. And they will pay those expenses directly to the vendor.
Okay.
And therefore, you eliminate your surplus.
Gotcha. And it's going to something to help you as opposed to getting
you
in arrears.
And you don't lose that money.
Right.
That's not money that you're losing, that you're giving it away.
Yeah.
Because you would have to pay those bills anyway.
Exactly.
So what the trust company is doing is they're paying it directly for you. And this is a vehicle and a tool that the law here in New York allows you to use so that you become eligible for Medicaid.
That's an awesome little thing to know. On that note, let's take a small break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having a really important conversation with Ms. Tanya Hobson-Williams. She's an attorney with Hobson-Williams PC in New York, and she's really laying down a template that I think, even if you don't live in New York, you need to find a lawyer that does what she does, whatever state you're in, so you can start planning accordingly. Before the break, we were talking about a way to have a separate company pay your bills, keep you under the limit of so you're still Medicaid eligible, and also take your family members out of the fray, because it takes a lot. I mean, first of all, you hope that you have family members that have your back, but I'm sure there are situations where that doesn't happen, and you have a senior depending on a loved one, and they end up not paying their bills or taking care of themselves. I mean, this is a safety mechanism that you know that even if a family member is involved, they're out of the loop, and if they don't have your best interest at heart, they don't get a chance to hurt you. I mean, if you want to think about it the opposite way, right?
Absolutely.
Now, before the...
It's a wonderful tool that we have here in New York, and as you stated, whatever state you're in, you really need to seek out someone who's qualified, who can investigate for you to see if some of these planning tools are available to you and your family.
Absolutely. Now, in the first part of the last segment, I asked you how young you have to be to start planning. You told me, you know, the sooner the better, because it's going to be more cost effective. How old can you be? Well, you know, you can always come to this at any point, and I'm sure there are listeners out there that may be in their 70s or so. How old can you be to get this done? Can you be in an extreme state? You know, can you already have a catastrophic illness and still do this?
Absolutely. It's never too late. In New York, there's a 5-year look-back period, which means that whenever you apply for Medicaid, they are going to look back 5 years worth of your financial assets and situation. So when you go to your attorney, who will hopefully do some planning for you, they will determine whether or not, at the point you're at, whether there are some transfers of your assets that you can do that will enable you to qualify for Medicaid immediately, or whether you have to wait 5 years before you become eligible. So there are certain transfers that you can do immediately that the law allows you to do that would make you qualify for Medicaid immediately, no matter what age you are. So it's very, very specific to the individual and their circumstances. So, for example, in New York, the law allows you to make a transfer to your spouse without penalty. So if you are 75 years old, a 75-year-old male in declining health who may need some assistance, and you have a 70-year-old wife who's in good health, and if the 75-year-old male needs to go into an institution for long-term care, and he has a home in his name, or maybe the home is owned jointly, and maybe he has $50,000 in the bank, which is clearly over the $14,850 Medicaid limit in New York, the law would allow him to take his $50,000 and transfer it to his wife, take the interest he has in his home and transfer it to his wife and any other assets that he has and transfer them all to the well spouse, the wife, and he becomes instantly eligible for Medicaid for long-term care.
That's really good to know.
So that's a specific example where an individual who is in crisis, who is at a certain age, who can become eligible for Medicaid.
That's really good to know. Now, another scenario might be a younger person who has kidney failure or HIV, something where you have a chronic illness. That doesn't that automatically qualify you for Medicaid as well if you have something along those lines?
Well, again, in New York, the criteria will be different state by state.
Mm-hmm.
But in New York, an individual such as that who is not over 65 could qualify for Medicaid under what they call a modified adjusted gross income, which is a different criteria for determining whether someone is eligible for Medicaid. And under that criteria, you would look at the person's income. You would only look at their income, and that would determine whether or not they're eligible for Medicaid if their income is below a certain number.
Okay.
I have used the pool income trust in similar situations where you may have an individual who is under 65 and, you know, may have kidney failure or some other sort of medical problem. And in New York, it's called community Medicaid. And so the person will apply for the community Medicaid. And if because of their income, they're not eligible, then we set up the pooled income trust to get them eligible for Medicaid.
Okay. And for people who have Social Security disability or anything of those, like things like that, does that make them more likely to fit into this kind of category? Or can they use that in addition, or is that considered an income if they're getting a disability check? Because sometimes people, it's like, I feel like they mix and match stuff.
For programs such as SSI, supplemental Social Security income benefits and SSD, there are instances specifically with SSI where if you qualify for SSI, you automatically get Medicaid.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about those income and resource determinations because they've already determined that you're eligible.
But if you have, I mean, I don't know very much about this aspect, but if you have a home or anything like that, would you still have to do some trust planning even though you automatically qualify for Medicaid? Because it's tangible property, right?
Well, again, it will depend upon whether you're over 65 or under 65.
Oh.
And it also depends on the type of Medicaid that you're applying for, whether you're applying for community Medicaid, which would also include home care and doctor's visits, or whether you're applying for nursing home Medicaid. All of those affect whether or not you're entitled to have a house in your name.
Can you
so there are a number of variables that have to be taken into consideration.
Well, you just explained to me in a nutshell why you definitely need a lawyer for this, because that sounds so, it's just so picky. I mean,
exactly.
My goodness. Can you tell us which one is which?
Everyone's situation is different. And that's what you have to be mindful of. I hear a lot, well, I have a friend and they were able to get Medicaid. Why can't I get Medicaid?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the friend's situation may be very different from yours. So it's very, very fact specific. And it depends upon, again, what type of care you need. Is it just for doctor's visits? How old are you? Do you have family members? Do you have a family member that would qualify as an exempt transfer to whom which you can transfer your assets? So there are a lot of variables that come into play, and you really want someone who can assess your situation, determine whether there are any exempt transfers that can be made, any trusts that you can benefit from that would enable you to qualify for Medicaid. And it's only an experienced practitioner who can assist you with that.
That's an absolute truth. Now, what if you're a child? Is that the child of the person? Is that someone that can get an exempt, a transfer exemption, or no? It has to be a spouse.
That's a good question. And actually, yes. Under the Medicaid rules for long-term care, one of the transfers that you can make, as I said previously, you can transfer to a spouse without penalty. You can transfer to a disabled child without penalty. You can also transfer your assets to what they call a caretaker child. And a caretaker child is someone that the law defines as a child who has lived in the house with you for 2 years before you actually needed assistance. So, if you own a home and your son or your daughter live in the home with you, and they help care for you, and they live there for 2 years, and all of a sudden you find yourself in crisis, and you need long-term care, you can transfer your home to that child as a caretaker child and be eligible for Medicaid, and there will be no penalty.
But they have to live with you. They can't pay your bills or be your economic support.
Well, you have to be careful of that also.
Okay.
They do need to live with you for the 2 year period.
Uh-huh.
And if they are paying your bills or giving you money on a consistent basis, you have to be careful because Medicaid can look at that as income.
That's crazy. Really?
Yes.
But that's really wrong because it's like a gift, isn't it?
It is a gift, but if it's a continuous and routine gift, then it's income, and that you should, as the giver, be required to pay towards the person's care.
Mm-mm-mm.
So if you're giving mom $500 a month to help her, you know, pay her bills, and then she needs Medicaid, they're going to say, well, you've been giving her $500, so you can continue to give her that $500, and we're going to count that towards her income.
Wow, that seems to be a little harsh.
Well, you know, Medicaid is an expansive, huge program, and it's billions of dollars of the federal budget. It made up 24% of the federal budget in 2014, the Medicaid program. So they have to limit and minimize the cost any way they can. And trust me, they do.
I've been on the other side as a doctor. They do. Trust us. On that note, let's take our last break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. But speaking with Ms. Hobson-Williams about how to navigate the Medicaid system and protect your wealth. And, you know, we have our great conversations in the break. I was asking a couple questions about the solvency of Medicaid. And you told me that it was 24% of the budget, of the federal budget, which is a huge amount of money. And I asked if it were solvent, just like Medicare. Is it insolvent like Medicare? And you made a comment that I think our listeners need to really understand. You said that it's like almost like a revolving door. They claw back money. How do they do that?
Well, it's been my experience, and it's an actual fact that Medicaid also recovers a great deal of the money that they expend. Clearly nowhere near the amount that they put out, but that's one of the pitfalls of making sure you're doing the proper planning, because the same way that you receive the Medicaid, they're entitled to recover it back from you. So if for some reason someone advised you that you do qualify for Medicaid, and a lot of times Medicaid makes mistakes, and they will give you Medicaid. And because the cost of long-term care is so high, the recovery costs are also very high. So if Medicaid paid $200,000 for the cost of your care over a two-year period, which is very common, and you were not eligible to receive that Medicaid, they can file a claim against you to recover all $200,000 paid.
Wow.
There's also a state recovery. So if you received Medicaid and you pass away and there's money in your estate from which they can recover, they will recover. They will file a claim against your estate to recover benefits paid. Now, the rules on that are complex as well, but there are a lot of different scenarios under which Medicaid can recover the money that they paid to you. And so you want to be very careful about that as well. I have one case. It doesn't involve a senior or an elderly person. It was actually a young girl who was born with a birth defect. I believe it was cerebral palsy, and a supplemental needs trust was created for her because her parents received a settlement from a lawsuit, and the proceeds from that lawsuit were placed into this supplemental needs trust. And so what a supplemental needs trust does is it enables the person to receive benefit from things that Medicaid wouldn't pay for. So if the person wanted to go on a trip, the monies could theoretically be paid from the trust. However, it also shields that money from Medicaid. So Medicaid says, you put this money in the trust, and so we're going to give you Medicaid benefits. However, as a condition to that, when the beneficiary of that trust dies, Medicaid is entitled to be reimbursed from any money remaining in the trust.
Oh, wow.
So in this particular case, the young girl died at about age 20, and there was approximately $5 million in the trust. And over that 20-year lifespan of that young woman, Medicaid had paid out over $2.5 million in Medicaid. And since there was money in that supplemental needs trust, they wanted to be repaid. Now, that may sound fair, and in some instances, a scenario like that is fair. Medicaid paid over $2 million in benefits, and there's $5 million available, so they should be reimbursed. But you have to look at the vehicle, the financial vehicle that those assets are in. They weren't liquid. So to liquidate those assets would reduce them to a little over $1 million, which would deplete all the assets that were remaining in the trust. And the family, the mother and father of this young girl, would get nothing if Medicaid were paid in full.
Wow.
So Medicaid recovers a great deal of money that they put out through different vehicles and avenues.
Now, for the trust that we talked about previously, would they be protected when she set them up? Not this type of supplemental, but the trust that a lawyer sets up with you. Would that be protected if the person passed away?
In most instances, the money would be protected because it does not become an asset of the individual's estate. A trust is not part of your estate, and Medicaid collects from assets that are contained in the estate.
That's a huge difference, and that's what makes
it very big difference.
Yeah, that's huge.
Whereas a supplemental needs trust, there's a specific provision in it that allows Medicaid to recover from it when the beneficiary dies. It's a different type of trust.
Okay.
And it operates very differently from a trust that we discussed earlier for Medicaid planning.
I'm going to ask you a side question, which may not be related, but if you do have an issue like that, we have a child that's affected at birth, do you have to set up that same type of trust, or can you do what you want to do in terms of a trust? Or is that mandated?
No, it's not mandated. The reason why many people choose to create a supplemental needs trust is because if you have an inheritance or if you have proceeds from a lawsuit, mm-hmm. which is what usually funds these supplemental needs trusts,
mm-hmm.
if you don't create the supplemental needs trust, then the money that you receive from the lawsuit, usually you're going to have to use for your medical benefits.
I see.
Usually you receive this, it's a personal injury award, a medical malpractice award, and so the individual usually has significant medical needs. And so with that large settlement or award, you're not going to be eligible for Medicaid. So you're going to have to use that money to pay for your care. However, if you put that money in the supplemental needs trust, Medicaid will pay for your care, and the money in the trust will be used to supplement your lifestyle.
Okay. I got you now. And is this taxable at all or no? The money from the trust,
no,
you take
not.
It out. Okay.
Typically, it's not. I don't want to make a broad general statement.
Uh-huh.
Every situation is different. However, typically it wouldn't be.
Okay. Well, I think you've really opened my eyes to what's out there and how it is a very complex topic, and you just can't wing it. That's definitely the take-home message from this, I think.
Right. Absolutely. Some people would prefer to try to do things on their own. The websites now are filled with information and forms,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people think that they can download a form and fill it out. And, you know, allow that to be the vehicle that you know, assists them.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about your home, which for a lot of people is their most valuable mm-hmm. asset, and when you're talking about your life savings and earnings that you've put away, it makes more sense to invest in a good attorney to try to save and preserve those assets, to transfer that wealth to the objects of your desire, your family members, your children, your spouse, then to allow it to be, you know, used for medical expenses, which some people actually want to do, would mm-hmm. prefer to do, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
They feel that they have the money, and so if it costs $100,000 to pay for their care, they'll spend that $100,000 and deplete their assets. However, there are other people who feel that because the government provides this benefit and this service, that they would prefer to use it and save that money to pass to their children.
Well, the key is to be able to pass it to your children. That's the that's it in a nutshell. You have to do it in the right way, otherwise you don't help yourself down the road.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, if you have assets in your estate, when you pass away, under certain circumstances, Medicaid could, you know, assert a claim against those assets. I know in New York they have what they call a tape match. And whenever an estate is created, they run the names of Medicaid recipients against those estate proceedings. And if there's a match, they know they can file a claim against that estate.
That's incredible. And they're not playing with you. They're not playing at all with this.
Absolutely not.
Is there any criminal thing that you can be charged with, fraud or anything like that, if
Absolutely.
You run afoul? Okay.
In New York City, they have a Medicaid Fraud Bureau in Manhattan, and a number of people receive letters routinely from this unit alleging Medicaid fraud. They're also the state attorney general. They also oversee Medicaid fraud. But at the local level in New York City, the New York City Human Resources Administration has a unit that investigates fraud, Medicaid fraud. Usually, on the local level, what they're looking for is repayment.
Mm-hmm.
If they determine that either you received Medicaid fraudulently or incorrectly, usually they're interested in having you repay it to them. And they're usually pretty generous in terms of offering a payment plan. And in a lot of instances, if you have a good attorney to advocate for you, mm-hmm. you can even get those Medicaid claims reduced. Substantially. So if you owe them $50,000, you can advocate to get it reduced to maybe $10,000.
That's a good thing to know.
Depending on the situation.
And on the
or
last,
even less.
In the last few seconds that
we
have left.
There have been times when I've seen Medicaid claims for reimbursement come in, and I've been able to get them discharged completely. Because of different situations and circumstances. It's usually at the state level in New York where they proceed against you criminally.
In the last two seconds that we have...
Usually it's doctors, unfortunately, and pharmacists and people in the medical industry where they really, really, they target them.
I'm sure they do.
You criminally.
I don't doubt that. Now, on the last seconds that we have, how can we reach you?
Well, you can find me at my website, which is thobsonwilliamslaw.com. My offices are 8701 Midland Parkway, Lobby A in Jamaica Estates, New York. My phone number is 718-210-4744.
Thank you so much for coming on today. I learned a lot, and I'm sure that my listeners did too.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.